Good morning. And welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I am Sandy Ingham, Prairie's halftime minister. If this is your first time here, or one of your first times here, there will be a chance later on in the service for you to introduce yourselves, unless you don't want to do that, of course. We encourage you to come more than once, because our services vary a lot. Sometimes, obviously, I do the service. Sometimes we have someone else from within the congregation who does the service, and sometimes we have outside speakers. But whoever comes here, we want them to feel welcome. And we do strive very hard to be open-minded and open-hearted, no matter what your sexual identification is, no matter your gender identity, no matter your color of your eyes, your hair, no matter your age, your physical abilities or inabilities, and most importantly, no matter where you are on this journey of life, we welcome you. These then are the opening words, and they are from Carl Seberg. Let there be joy in our coming together. Let there be truth heard in the words we speak and the songs we sing. Let there be help and healing for our disharmony and our despair. Let there be silence for the voice within us and beyond us. Let there be joy in our coming together. Mary, would you please light the chalice? Thank you. Oh, sorry. Always nice to have something to light with. May the light we now kindle inspire us to use our powers to heal and not to harm, to help and not to hinder, to bless and not to curse, to serve you, Spirit of Freedom. Thank you, Mary. Before I share these readings from the Hebrew and Christian scriptures with you, I would remind you that in our faith tradition, it is perfectly acceptable to translate words, religious texts that you are finding troubling because of the language. So here I am using the King James translation because it is the one I grew up with. And the language in this version of the scriptures, I think, is beautiful and elegant, though patriarchal and some other things too sometimes. But that doesn't mean that I am comfortable with all of the words, perhaps especially words such as Lord thy God. I am comfortable translating the phrase Lord thy God into other definitions of God, such as Paul Tillich's definition, God is the ground of all being. Or James Luther Adams's definitions, that which ultimately concerns humanity, or that in which we should place our confidence. So from the Hebrew scriptures, Exodus chapter 20, verses 2 to 17. I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in earth below, or earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. And from the Christian scriptures, Matthew chapter 22, verses 37 to 40, Jesus said unto him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. This is the first and the greatest commandment. And the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and all the prophets. So now you can re-enter the year 2017. Those of you who grew up in traditional households might have gone back there well. We're like the boy whose name we never do know in the story that I shared with all of you. We have high aspirations. We just don't know where to begin. Someday, we are going to, well, if not win the Nobel Peace Prize, at least be more true to ourselves, live life with more integrity. That is, if we could just figure out what to do with our sister, or our mother, or our father, or our best friend, or whoever, or whatever is keeping us from acting on our highest aspirations, or the ongoing depression many of us feel, as so much of what we've worked for seems to be coming apart. So much of what sustains beloved community and helps us build on it. Meals on Wheels, the Environmental Protection Agency. So someday, when we're not so depressed and despondent, we'll start thinking about our higher aspirations. But the only thing that keeps us from doing that really is us. Our own true selves prevent our trying to act daily on our highest aspirations. But I need help. I always need help doing this. I don't tie my sister up and put her under the bed anymore, although she's 8 years younger. I was prone to maybe wanting to do things like that. So we all need the help of the ages. I need help in my inward turning to reflect upon my deeds and what is preventing me from winning the Nobel Peace Prize. I need the help of the ages. I need to review the bodies of conduct, the ethical standards, the rules and regulations that might help me return to my highest self. So it's not surprising that I would look at those things in the faith traditions of my culture and my upbringing to see what I want to keep in my ethical backpack. And it is not only from my upbringing that the ethical standards and the rules and regulations come, but from this Unitarian Universalist tradition of ours. I find it's often true in congregations that people pretty much know our seven principles, but they look at me blankly when I mention the six sources from which we draw those principles and upon which we supposedly act. So if you want to look at the sources, you need to go to hymn number one and then turn back a page. The living tradition we share draws from many sources. It's right there under our principles. And if you look down, you'll get to Jewish and Christian teachings, which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves. Not going to go into the obvious this morning, which is loving ourselves. A lot of us don't get past that step. I have dubbed the Ten Commandments the Big Ten for my purposes today. A few years ago, a rabbi who was a colleague of mine in Plattsburgh, New York, asked me if I would be a guest lecturer for a class she was teaching. The subject that she asked me to address was how the Ten Commandments affect my life. Now, this was not a subject to which I had given much thought for many, many years, if ever, not even in my seminary studies. A few days after she asked me to do this, I was teaching a Building Your Own Theology class at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship where I was the minister. Participants in that class are asked to pick one thing they would like to discard from their religious upbringing and background, and one thing they would keep. One person in that class said they would throw out the Ten Commandments because they seemed too rigid, too confining, too absolute. Two references to the Big Ten within the space of a week. The universe must have been trying to tell me something. At that moment, I wasn't even sure that I could name all of the Ten Commandments. I couldn't. I missed three, including the first two, "You shall have no other gods before me, and you shall not make yourself a graven image." I have some theories about why I could not remember those two, and I apologize to those wonderful Presbyterian ministers I grew up with. I have the other one I missed was remember the Sabbath to keep it holy, which seems odd for a minister to forget. But I'm not sure. I have theories about why I missed that one too. Maybe because I try to regard every day as holy. The first four commandments have been called the spiritual commandments because they are concerned with humanity's relationship to God, relationship to that which we ultimately put our trust in, or the ground of all being, or that which is more important than anything else. So a quick review of those four: "You shall have no other gods before me," does not deny the existence of other gods, but demands total allegiance to the new one, capital G, God. "You shall not make graven images" is sometimes translated as "you shall not worship idols." "You shall not misuse the name of God," which is often stated as "you shall not use God's name in vain." "And you shall keep the Sabbath holy," interpreted to mean "you shall rest on the Sabbath." I am fond of what the commentaries say about the point of that Sabbath commandment: to set one day apart from all others to serve as a bulwark against endless self-destructive human greed. That's what you're supposed to be doing today. You're supposed to be thinking about endless self-destructive human greed. It was intriguing that the children knew what greed meant. The fifth commandment is a transitional one, a positive commandment for a change. "Honor your father and your mother." Nothing sexist in this one. The commentaries tell us that this commandment is essential to the survival of the community. That probably won't surprise you. It allows for the uninterrupted flow of community tradition from one generation to the next. And then there are the five no-nonsense prohibitions. "You shall not kill," which interestingly is sometimes translated as "you shall not murder." There is considerable difference between the words kill and murder. If we shall not kill, then we shall all be vegetarians, I should think. Excuse me. Number six, "You shall not commit adultery," guards marriage and family against the intrusion of third parties and the socially disruptive questions of the legitimacy of children and the transfer of family legacy. Remember, we must always keep in mind the context within which the Big Ten were formulated and developed and evolved, and that they were passed on for many, many years orally. They weren't written down. Number seven is "You shall not steal." I call your attention to the quote at the top of your order of service: "In vain we call old notions fudge and bend our conscience to our dealing. The Ten Commandments will not budge, and stealing will continue stealing." Number eight tells us not to bear false witness against our neighbors. This is not quite the same thing as not lying in general. Rather, this rule was aimed more at perjury in court. The survival of a community is obviously threatened when the weak, the disadvantaged, and falsely accused can find no remedy before impartial judges informed by credible witnesses. And finally, the last of the Big Ten warns us against covetousness and indirectly, I think, jealousy. This commandment is the first one to go beyond public and overt acts to private attitudes. Its purpose was to forestall the conspiracies that lead to illegal, ruthless seizure of persons and property. Richard Gilbert, longtime minister of the First Universalist Unitarian Church in Rochester, New York, now minister emeritus there, says that we live in an age of moral deconstruction. That is, we fearlessly critique and criticize, dissect and dismantle our culture's conventional wisdom, creating a vacuum. For example, one of the great running jokes about Unitarian Universalists is that we believe not in the Ten Commandments, but in the Ten Suggestions. Is it true that we only accepted the Ten Commandments if they could be amended at the next annual meeting? Says one Unitarian Universalist. And that's just the beginning. Jokes abound, and parodies of the Ten Commandments abound. In one cartoon, Moses says to God, "Maybe I'd better deliver just the first 10 now and see how they go down." In another, Moses comes down from Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments and says to two people who are waiting anxiously, "It's just a first draft, but it looks like no one's going to get away with anything." Another caricature shows a man and a woman standing outside a church looking at its bulletin board. "Special this week. Observe any 8 of the Ten Commandments." Unitarian Universalist minister Robert Walsh wrote what he called a nonologue for the fridge. "A friend asked me," Robert Walsh writes, "to try my hand at rewriting the Ten Commandments. She wanted something to tape to the door of her refrigerator. Well, I only came up with 9. But then I spent much less time on this than it took Moses to climb the mountain." Walsh's 9 are: you shall not worship the finite and the conditional as if it were the ultimate. You shall keep to a rhythm of work and rest in the spirit of the Sabbath. You shall keep your promises. You shall tell the truth. You shall try to make amends for the things you break. You shall honor the people who give and sustain life. You shall honor the earth. You shall grant to others the same rights to life, liberty, and property that you claim for yourself. And 9, you shall be kind. I like Walsh's 9 commandments. They address some gaps that I think are missing in the original 10. Perhaps there is actually some truth in that joke about Moses saying he'll just deliver the first 10 now and see how they go down. What else is not in the big 10? What would I add? What would you add? Right off the top of my head, here are 3 commandments that I would like specifically stated in my list of rules to live by. Thou shalt forgive. Maybe not forget, but definitely forgive. Thou shalt be extremely gentle with one another. Thou shalt not be abusive in language, in action, in thought. Does that mean that I think the Ten Commandments are irrelevant? No, not at all. I don't think that. You have to put them in their historical context, of course. Harper's Bible Dictionary points out that a commandment is a verbal or written requirement or order that appears over 180 times in the Old Testament, what we now refer to as the Hebrew Scriptures. And while the people are expected to keep, literally guard, that was the original word, guard, the commandments, they are not meant to be burdensome. They are the psalmist's delight. In Exodus 20, verse 6, right in the middle of delivering the Ten Commandments, God calls those who observe his commandments those who love me. And the Big Ten came into being, as I think I certainly implied a minute ago, because survival was at stake, the survival of the Israelites, and because the commandments provided a framework for living together in community. Harper's Bible Dictionary tells us that in function, the Ten Commandments can be compared to 10 posts supporting the fence separating the viable community of Israel from the marauding beasts of disorder, confusions, and bloodshed howling outside the pale. Of all the statutes needed to regulate the life of the community, these 10 were considered the essential ones. Should any one of those fence posts collapse, chaos could break out and wreak havoc in the community. The 10 commandments, or literally the 10 utterances, were formulated in a time when most people could not read or write. So, as I said, they passed them along orally, and they had to be memorized. They were often publicly recited by the community. The number of commandments? Exactly the number of fingers on both hands. The similarity of form, thou shall not, followed by a verb, makes it easier to memorize. Oh, fine. I can just hear you thinking, thank you, nice, thanks for the historical context, but so what? Does understanding their historical context make these commandments more meaningful to me? Yes, they do. Unfortunately, and I do think it's unfortunate, these ethical guideposts seem to be slipping from people's collective memory. In more than one poll, most people could name no more than 2 of the 10 commandments. Perhaps part of our problem, and this is not necessarily a bad thing, but I'm always concerned though with leaving a vacuum, but part of our problem as modern people is that these commandments had a great, capital G, enforcer, capital E, God, capital G, and you know how Unitarian Universalists are sometimes about these things. For many of us, this great enforcer concept has lost its power. We no longer believe in God as a supreme lawgiver. Richard Gilbert recalls one summer evening many years ago when a visitor, learning he was a minister, asked about his religion. When the visitor learned that Gilbert neither feared hell nor sought heaven, but believed in, and this is one of my favorite Richard Gilbert phrases, the importance of being good for nothing. This visitor was incredulous. He said, if he, the visitor, didn't fear eternal punishment or seek eternal reward, there would be no telling what he would do. He was bound to the great enforcer. So it's not always easy for people to discard this notion of the great enforcer out there somewhere keeping a logbook of our activities. Oh yeah, there is such a thing, but we don't call it God. It's the internet or something. Yes. For myself, if the Ten Commandments affect my life, and I don't believe in the concept of a great enforcer, which I don't, I have to ask myself, who does enforce the rules by which I live? Well, I do. I don't need an eternal or external great enforcer. I do need rules to live by, though. They're usually in process. I do need times to reflect upon how I have served as my own enforcer. How have I served as my own enforcer of the commandments, utterances, rules I believe in and try to keep in my daily living? So there are times during a liturgical year from other traditions that are perfect for that. For example, the Jewish high holidays in the fall. We Unitarian Universalists are intrigued and challenged by this concept of doing our own enforcing, of the importance of being good for nothing. There's another quote at the top of your order of service by Boris Pasternak. We are coerced not by the cudgel, but by an inward music, the irresistible power of unarmed truth, the powerful attraction of its example. Unarmed truth and maybe character. Character being what we are when no one is looking. Character is when we act though it will not do us any particular good. Character is when we respond to the unenforceable obligations that our neighbors put on us. And like the boy in the book, we don't hide around the corner of a building when we see someone less fortunate. The Ten Commandments are a valuable part of our heritage, however unfinished and or idealistic they may be. Generally speaking, I am opposed to absolutes, but what I am really opposed to is absolutes without the other end of the pole, which I think would be chaos. So absolutes without process. For the Ten Commandments to have meaning for me and to be part of my personal code of conduct, I have to think of them as both absolute and in process. Is that even possible? Maybe in this case, ideal is a better word to use than absolute. I don't have any problem viewing the Ten Commandments as ideals to strive for, but I think they need to be continually reworked. They are unfinished business. A couple of other things that I don't think are covered in the Big Ten. Do they address violence? Where are laughter and humor and playfulness, all of which are essential to any rules I'm going to live by? What about environmental issues? Is this covered by the Big Ten? And what to do with the two greatest commandments from the New Testament, what we now call the Christian scriptures? Certainly, what Jesus called the greatest commandment, to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind, is covered in the Ten Commandments. But what about that second greatest one? Love your neighbor as yourself. It seems to me that loving your neighbor as yourself could be more explicitly spelled out in the Ten Commandments. And maybe there should be something about loving yourself and taking care of yourself. As I said earlier, I have always thought that it is difficult to love others as yourself if you don't love yourself, if you don't even understand how to do that. Do I think the Big Ten should be posted in public places? Absolutely not. About a decade ago, a federal judge did rule that the Ten Commandments monument outside a courthouse in Oklahoma could stay, rejecting arguments that it promotes Christianity at the expense of other religions. The Supreme Court has ruled that religious displays on government property are not inherently unconstitutional and must be considered case by case, perhaps. But I think rules to live by are personal and a matter of inner contemplation, not something that should be or needs to be posted in public. If you're going to post the Ten Commandments outside the courthouse in Oklahoma, well, let's give equal posting to my version of the Big Ten, or to Dick Gilbert's version, which we will get to in just a moment. All right, I'm being a bit facetious, but at the very least, I would want to see the equivalent of the Ten Commandments from all other major faith traditions, particularly those from Eastern religions and from indigenous peoples, posted as well. So am I going to keep the Big Ten in my ethical backpack? Yes, yes I am. They were ingrained in me at a very early age. And you know, they are not such a bad thing to have ingrained in you. The Big Ten provide, if nothing else, a lot of food for thought as possible rules for living. They give me a starting point for formulating my own commandments for the most true way for me to conduct my life. They help me through the process of teshuvah, which is a Jewish word for renewal and atonement. Teshuvah, the process of repenting and returning to your higher self. The Ten Commandments remind me that I'm not alone in the quest for figuring out not only how to be human, but most importantly, how to be human in community. This quest for rules to live by has been going on for a long time. So I'm going to keep the Ten Commandments in my ethical backpack. And in closing, I've asked some people in the audience to share Richard Gilbert's take on the Ten Commandments, what he calls 10 habits to be learned by highly ethical people. I forget to whom I gave number one. Oh, Kent, please wait for the mics. Dan, you'll have a bit of running around to do here.
The cosmos does not make junk. Creation is fundamentally good. Walk gently upon the earth as you would be a good guest in a neighbor's house.
Two.
People are precious. Be gentle with your neighbor. None of us knows what it will be like, what it is like to be another. So try to walk a mile in another's moccasins.
We have a right to be here. Be gentle with yourself. Aspire to be more than you are, but accept your finitude.
Love people, use things, treat people as ends, not means. People must not be used for our interior purposes.
Doing good is not about keeping score. Affirm the importance of being good for nothing. Do good for its own sake.
Let the inner and outer person be the same. Be honest with yourself.
I think we're at number seven.
Mm-hmm, we are. Thank you.
Deeds are more important than creeds, so act that your behavior speaks louder than your words.
The world is a neighborhood. All people are our neighbors. We are here to share with our neighbors so that everyone has enough, no one too much. And we share with maximum freedom and minimum coercion.
Number nine, show a little more humor than the Ten Commandments.
Always be a little kinder than necessary.
Finally, do unto others 20% better than you would have them do unto you. The 20% is to correct for subjective error.
Thank you, all 10 of you, and Dan for running all over the place. Well, I could tell a very short story then. I don't know if I can do this. This is from the rabbinic tradition in among the Jews. The rabbis are always debating the finest points of law and everything, and there was a big debate about how no one could ever tell all of the rules and all of the commandments and so on and so forth. Without a great weeks, or certainly hours. And this one rabbi, and it was a famous one, but I'm blanking on his name, kept saying, I can tell all the rules standing on one leg. No, you can't. And he did. You shall love God, with all your heart and all your soul, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I think that's such a great story. The closing words are attributed to St. Francis of Assisi. Where hate rules, let us bring love. Where sorrow, joy. Let us strive more to comfort others than to be comforted, to understand others than to be understood, to love others more than to be loved. For it is in giving that we receive, and in pardoning that we are pardoned. Go in peace, greet your neighbors, drink coffee, go to the movies if you're doing the film festival.